Welcome to the Hug Nation podcast. This week, I tried to leave it a little unedited and left in a bunch of the Q&A and casual random stuff that happens during the live broadcast every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific time. So let me know if you prefer it or if you'd rather me cut that stuff out. Welcome. I'm Halcyon. This is Hug Nation. And the topic of the day is being an artist. This weekend, I had a friend of mine who I've known for years. He is an accomplished filmmaker and songwriter, and has never been to Burning Man. And so he asked me, what do you like most about Burning Man? And I often talk about gifting because the whole principle of gifting has changed my mindset about the world so much. And I think it has the profound transformative effect on the world. But what I told him was, what I love the most is seeing thousands of people have this pop, epiphany, awareness that they are an artist, that they have gifts to give, that they are in the driver's seat of an epic myth. They have the ability to be active contributors to the narrative of their lives, whereas our culture has trained us to be passive receivers. We have been trained to be consumers. We have been trained to be entertained. Our current economic system thrives on our tendency to receive entertainment, to be motivated by marketing, to need things, and to consume. And so those in power filter to us the products that we consume, and we receive and drift without truly ever tuning into the magic, to the creativity that is a huge part of what it is to be a human being. And so one of the things that I try to explain to people if I'm greeting or when I talk to new people or even just reminder to people is that you are Burning Man. Some people, when they first get there, like, oh, I'm just going to check it out. Or someday in my life, I'm going to check out Burning Man. No, you cannot check out Burning Man in the same way you cannot bite your own teeth, because you are it. And when you shift that perspective and realize that everyone around you, everyone that is helping at the gate, everyone that is helping place the art, everyone that is creating the art, everyone that is serving you food, everyone there is parallel to you in the org structure. There is no audience and, excuse me, there is no performer and audience. There's just one huge stage that everyone is welcome on. And because we have this narrative about what being an artist is, it is easy to define yourself as not that. I don't put paint on a canvas. I don't sculpt things. I'm not good at drawing. But being an artist is about being creative and active, being a participant, choosing artistic decisions, being driven by some creative force, some divine force to make things more beautiful, to make things more interesting, to express from some way. Maybe it's not, I mean, I think in terms of beauty and happiness, but it could be expressing things from a dark place. It's just putting an element of your spice on the dish of human experience. And so when you're out at Burning Man, you get to see examples of so many types of artistic expression that you go, oh, wait, I could do that. Or people invite you in to do something, oh, I could do that. And because there is this culture of amateurism, there is this culture of good enough, there is this culture of there's no such thing as bad art. The art world will try to convince you otherwise. Your art teachers will convince you otherwise. But Burning Man is very clear about that. If you are expressing from the heart, that is art, that is perfect, and you should keep doing so. If you're trying to impress people, you're trying to do what you think they'll like, well, then you're out of alignment and you're playing the old games. You're playing your old script. And so much of our culture when you get to a certain age, we reevaluate, you know, with a kid and say, are you good enough to make a living doing this? If not, you know, put down the pens and pencils and paintbrushes. And Burning Man says, pick up the pens and pencils and paintbrushes. Pick up the food. Pick up the glue gun. Pick up anything that allows you to express, because you are a human being, a creative force in the universe. That is part of what you are. To deny that is to deny the gift of life. And so stretching your boundaries and stretching your definition of an art from physical creativity, physical creation, can allow you to see yourself as an artist in the way you speak, in the way you listen, in the way you clean. And so you see, and then you start to realize that you can add a little bit of art, a little bit of creativity into everything. I mean, you know, it can start small. You take your shoes and change the color of the shoelaces. Suddenly, what was a utilitarian thing to cover my feet becomes a form of expression. Shifting the default, making things a conscious, active choice instead of a passive receiving. And I think that's an easy way to start. It's just the way you clothe your body. You adorn yourself in the canvas of your being in a way that is not straight off a mannequin, that is not part of a trend, that is not something you saw in a magazine, but is instead a childlike expression of color or form or shape. And who cares? There's no one judging you, as long as you know, it's not chafing you and causing you rashes, then it's beautiful. I just started, I got a new hat and I spray painted it. And then I thought, well, maybe if I strap some lights to it. And I think that that is one of the most the liberating things about being in the Burning Man world, is realizing that you can just start tweaking things and putting your flavor on stuff, and the world becomes this massive canvas. And then the choices you make in every direction can start to be artistic ones. I am one who likes to share words. Other people share their performances. And your performance doesn't have to be Cirque du Soleil. It doesn't have to be Tony Robbins. Your gift is a gift because you give it, not because it has value in a commerce world. This is a world without commerce. This is a world of pure giving. And that liberation, that ability to see yourself as an artist, helps you to see that, oh, this city is made by us. Every piece of this organism, every cell plays a role. Some form together and do massive, amazing things, huge sculptures. And that's, you know, not to devalue the huge sculptures, because it is the landscape of massive, big art that I think really shakes us out of the world that we live in a default way, to see expression and our artistic energy in such a profound and larger than life and mind-blowing wow way. And so in the landscape of these massive expressions that are often done as collectives, like huge organs filled with cells, we also have the ability to make little bitty personal expressions doing that are just as important in the grand scheme. You cannot take one out of the whole. And the only way you can do it wrong is if you pull out and view it as a spectator. That isn't to say that part of your role as an artist can be participating in other people's expressions, you know, walking through someone's, you know, maze, grabbing a paintbrush on someone's public canvas, you know, taking a class from someone. That's an absolutely participatory way to be a part of it. And both of those avenues of finding a way of personally expressing in some artistic way and seeing yourself as an artist changes the world. And allowing yourself to receive people's artistic expression changes the world. And suddenly, the two of those combined puts you in the protagonist of an epic myth with grand gifts and interesting interactions and free from the binds, from the bondage of passive consumerism that we have been bred into. Some of the crazy circumstances and weather and landscape, all of that is part of the helping hands to shake us loose. But in the end, the objective, I think, is to get yourself so that your mind itself is an empty canvas. And then you can start to decorate, display, express onto that canvas from a place deep inside you, a truth. And if it is authentic, it's perfect. Doesn't have to resonate with anyone else. The beauty of Burning Man is that there's radical inclusion. If you are being genuine, if you are expressing your heart, your expression will be as respected as a dancer trained at Juilliard or a painter with 40 years experience. We are all equal and peers in the realm of surrendering to our truth, to singing our heart song in this divine chorus. The most profound shift in my head of like what art is and what an artist can be was the first time I experienced the temple. And if you're not familiar with the temple, it is a gorgeous wooden structure. It changes year to year, but it is often a gorgeous. It is often a gorgeous wooden structure. Many years it has been led by David Best, and once it's complete, it is mind-blowing and beautiful and sacred. But then, over the course of the week, tens of thousands of fellow participants adorn the walls with words and photographs and miniature shrines. Words of memories, things that people want to let go, personal artistic expressions, personal expressions of the inner artist in the way that it is connected to someone, some feeling, some part of them. And so over the course of the week, this grand structure fills up with the heart, creative love, loss, pain, emotional energy of tens of thousands of people. And then you have this space, this structure, this energetic thing that isn't owned by any one person. And everyone is welcome to be a part of simply be if they are coming to it from an honest way. And then when it is burned, it allows everyone to share this collective artistic expression. You don't have to know how to draw. You don't have to have any skills whatsoever. You just have to allow a little bit of you to be invested in this thing and to let go of it. And then art becomes something that could never be contained in a gallery, could never be contained within a frame or the time slot of a performance. It is an aspect of being a human. What a gift. So I'm grateful for Burning Man every year for reminding me of it, and every year of getting to see other people wake up to it, because it becomes a spiral of inspiration. I'm so grateful. I can't wait to see what you have to express. You badass artist, you. There's a great new book, Big Magic, by Elizabeth Gilbert, where she talks a lot about creativity and the muse, and how, you know, if you look back a couple of generations, most people were makers. Most people creatively expressed in some way. They made things a little bit more beautiful. They made things with their hands. I look at my grandparents, you know, my grandma sewed, my grandpa made rugs, he did woodwork, you know. Most of our relatives have these expressive tendencies. They weren't professional artists, but art and being an artist is a part of who they are. And in many ways, we have lost that as the Industrial Revolution has made us more and more focused in our expertise and our tasks. we are discouraged from being Renaissance people and encouraged to being specialists and allow, you know, we'll take this certain muse class, this class of people that are creative, set them aside and say, you guys collectively express for us. And that is way too much pressure on them, and it is denying us the human experience. So make bad art and then realize that it's good art because it's your art. And if it's authentic and it's real and it's true, even if it's just glue gunning a patch of fur onto an old pair of jeans, it's a piece of you. It's a expression coming from inside you. And I can't wait to see it. So this weekend, I spent time with an old friend, Justin Connor. And if you have listened to any archives of Hug Nation and you heard the intro song that I play, that is a clip from the first album by Justin Connor. So he is a part of my week in my Hug Nations for, you know, decade plus, and but we don't see each other very much. We were friends in college and after college, and we stay connected online, but it was so good to spend time with him and my brother, and we went hiking and just talked, and he is on a profound and beautiful spiritual path, and so we had some really interesting conversations. And one thing that came up that I've been stewing on and thinking about and wanted to share and maybe gauge your perspective on is that of renunciation, of choosing not to indulge in the pleasures of the world. And that how important is that act in a spiritual path? You know, almost every spiritual tradition has a aestheticism of some sort that has an abstinence, that has a path where people either live super simply or actively make themselves suffer, whipping themselves and things like that. These going out to the desert, living like a hermit, these are common paths of spiritual awakening in all sorts of traditions. And I made the argument that, you know, I kind of feel like you just have to find your sweet spot somewhere on the spectrum. Like on one end of the spectrum is total hedonism, just pleasure, pleasure, pleasure. And on the other end of the spectrum is like the Jainist, which is a tradition where they wear masks so they don't inhale any microbes and accidentally kill them. They sweep in front of them as they walk so they don't accidentally step on anything. They don't cook after dark because a fire could attract insects and accidentally kill them. And it's just like this extreme attempt at non-harm. And while I admire that path, I think that it feels excessive to me. It feels like it would rob me of the joy of being a human being. And I kind of feel like the goal is to find a sweet spot where you are honoring your desire to do good and to not cause harm in a way that you don't feel in conflict or guilty, but not feel so obligated to do that you aren't able to enjoy your life itself. Mother Teresa, for example, famously suffered a lot in life and was really struggled in her letters that were published back to her home parish. You know, she struggled. She was depressed. And so I kind of feel like, isn't one of the reasons we have consciousness so that we can feel joy, so that we can enjoy the ride, so that we can really take in the bounty of this fertile, magical planet? And Justin made an argument or made a point that I really, you know, I've been stewing on a lot, which is maybe a spiritual path is not about finding that comfort. It's about finding the edge and pushing into the places of discomfort, pushing in and pushing that line, because that's where the growth happens. And as much as I didn't want to admit that, the more I thought about it, I'm like, yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, you gotta have that mild discomfort, mild, maybe not constantly, but you gotta have an incentive to grow, to create, to change. Something has to be missing so that you can do. Because that's part of being a human too. And balance with that discomfort is the meditative practice of doing nothing, where there is nothing undone. There is no sense of suffering because you are, separate from that wheel. And I was thinking more about how, you know, there was a time when survival was so challenging that you didn't have to really actively deny yourself things. You didn't have to deny yourself, you know, rich foods because you were struggling to get enough calories to live. You didn't have to deny yourself pornographic materials because you were trying to find a mate. And so any sexual activity that you had would allow your DNA to continue. And within my lifetime, I have noticed and watched this shift of a certain tool benefit, and seeing how once it is all pervasive, there is a danger to it, and you have to start showing some discipline and practice, which is connectivity, this internet world, this ability to be constantly stimulated. It was, when I first discovered this, I thought it was the greatest thing in the world. And now I realize, like fire, it's great and dangerous. Just like sugar and fat and yummy foods, it's great and dangerous if you don't show discipline. Just like sexual urges, pornography initially seems great, can be dangerous without a little bit of discipline. All of these human urges that are part of the biology of being a human being, once we have the abundance of the modern world, we have to integrate some degree of restraint, of mindfulness in our actions, in a diet of what we intake in terms of food, entertainment, stimulus, and that a spiritual path without any of that, I think, will get overwhelmed. It lacks the degrees of suffering required for growth. As much as I don't want to admit that, because I like all the yummy stuff, I like all the abundance, I like the good food, I like the pornography, I like my super exciting, interesting phone and multiple, infinite hours of viewing on demand, but that constant entertaining of the monkey mind keeps us from the stillness, the integration with our divine path. So, not sure where you come out on that. I hear people that want to run off and join farms and raise their kids, away from technology. And where at one point that sounded crazy to me, now that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think that there is so much of the world that cannot compete with the scientifically engineered, attention-grabbing stuff of an iPad. So I say that as a reminder to myself. A few weeks ago, I talked about embracing the tedium of artistic expression. I'm also trying to embrace the rejection of things that bring pleasure, of things that make things easier, of things that lighten the load. Sometimes you got to have a heavy load so that you build up the muscles, and those muscles in this case are that of your peace and your spiritual practice and your heart. That being said, I will still be here every Monday, because this is part of my practice too. Balance in all things. Thank you. I love you. So if you anything I said today got you stirred up and you want clarification or you have a personal experience about either Burning Man artistry or about the challenge of having all your needs met in the modern world and the effect that that has on your spiritual practice, I would love to hear where you're at. Madeline saying, you would make a great dad. I had a vasectomy about 6 years ago. So if you'd like some of my my semen that I have on ice, I could see if I could get a withdrawal, and then you could have a kid, and I could still be the dad, but I'm really not interested in raising a kid right now. iRock6, I can see your chat. Tristan says, I'm all for mindfulness, but I also think that denying yourself pleasure is a relic of puritanical thought, and pleasure itself can be a path to the divine for some. I agree with that wholeheartedly. And I think that maybe the... I think, you know, it just comes down to balance. You know, and what really made me think about it so much was noticing the shift in how technology affects my life now, and that I need to have discipline about how much I interact with and utilize all my technology and connected tools in the same way that, you know, embracing and discovering your personal true expression with your sexuality is a beautiful path of self-discovery and can be a spiritual path. And I certainly consider it part of my previous spiritual path. But like anything, when it becomes all pervasive, I think it just knocks things out of balance. And then it can be an unhealthy thing. Just like food, you know, food is awesome. And being out of balance with your diet causes problems. That being said, if anyone would like to come over and get naked, I would like to express myself that way. I'm joking. Only a little bit. Thank you for that. That's well said. I think it's important. Thank you, Tristan, because I think that that's an important reminder that, you know, as I looking at some examples of these traditions where people deny the self, or deny pleasure, deny the human experience, you know, I have no doubt that it can lead to certain elements of awareness and peace, but it feels like it robs you of a part of the human experience. I mean, I believe that consciousness in part is a satellite ambassadorship that divine oneness sends out in billions and billions of ways. And part of our responsibility is to experience. And to deny the human experience is to kind of shut down as a cell in the cosmic organism. So, but you want to stay healthy as a cell too. You don't want to, you know, become cancerous and get out of control. Joni's saying, humans habituate very easily, which means that even with the good stuff, the pleasure from it will subside with having a lot of good thing. A little less lengthens out the habituation process, and we can get off of that good thing for longer. That's a really good point, and and that's part of, you know, why I use the word recalibration so often. I use the word recalibration so often because of that tendency, of that we get used to so many things in our life. We get used to a view, and you stop noticing. You get used to the warmth of your partner sleeping next to you at night, and then you stop realizing that, you know, that's the greatest thing in your life, but you stop even noticing it. You stop noticing, like, have you ever gone, every once in a while, I'll be in a grocery store, and I'll be like, oh my God, there's food from all over the world here. I could eat anything, anything. How many people in history would have their minds blown just to walk through a supermarket? Meanwhile, I have friends that go, Is that produce from Albertsons? Ugh, I can't believe you shop there. Like, that needs some recalibration there, I believe. Iroxane, I think the whole reason we are here is to help people, but to look at Earth from a distance, that would not be obvious. So sad. Well, you know, that's something else I was going to talk about today, is this is a sidestep. You know, I think it's a beautiful thing that I find so many people that are waking up to that kind of realization. They're waking up to the way the world is maybe is not the way that they have been taught. The script that you've been given about what success is doesn't really resonate. And you realize that there are all these other metrics of success, like helping people, like creatively expressing, like being authentic and genuine and being in alignment with your values. Like, these are metrics of success that, you know, were neglected for, you know, most of our educational system. We, money, success, status. You know. And so as people wake up to this new definition of what life is about, it's incredibly powerful and liberating. And very quickly people go from their career upward ladder to, I need to heal the world. I need to become a life coach. I need to teach people. I need to help people. And that instinct is awesome. But it needs to be wrapped in a little humility and a little bit of awareness that you can't go from taking the class to being the teacher and be effective unless you walk the walk for a while. And I know that when I was younger, I think I faked it and I spoke from an authority that I didn't really deserve or earn and have. Now I know that I definitely don't deserve or earn or have, but I have a little bit of a humility knowing that there is, I feel at peace with sharing my truth within the awareness of my limitations, with the wisdom of knowing that I know nothing, with the wisdom of knowing that I don't know how to heal the world. I don't know how to help people. If you help people, if you protect kids from falling down, they will be robbed of the experience of taking care of themselves. If you protect people, if you just don't have the vantage point. So the critical part of your role on this earth is to heal yourself and get in alignment with your truth. And from that truth, I believe and have faith and know to be true that then when you act in the world, you will do so in a way that helps others. You will crave to be of service. You will find ways to be of service that are in alignment with who you are and will touch the world in exactly the way that it's supposed to. If instead you go straight from, oh my gosh, I need to heal the world, you're still coming from an ego place of thinking you know what the world needs, thinking you know how the world's supposed to be, but it's coming from that same way of thinking, that same way of like growth. People want to build something big. They want to make something grand. They want to, and that the timeless Christ consciousness, Buddha teachers of history and that walk the earth now are not creating mega churches and creating mass social movements. They are walking their truth. And if that truth is in alignment, it will resonate with people and the ripples will change the world. But the world, I don't believe that the purpose of our existence is to rid the world of darkness. Our purpose is to brighten our personal light, which does eliminate the darkness, but it's a very significant difference in how it impacts the world and where you draw upon the motivations or the strategy of what you're going to be doing. So, you know, I sometimes feel like I'm a downer when people are fired up talking about how they want to change the world, because I think that that can be a very dangerous objective for someone who has not done decades of personal work. That being said, don't be discouraged. Just start working on yourself. And the easiest way to work on yourself is to find ways to be kind to other people. So, yeah. And here's another thing that I've been thinking about is that along those lines, this has all have to do with gifting. This has to do with like that awareness that other people's joy can make me happier. That is a truth that helps me. Like, I don't know how to end homelessness, but I know that I can provide clothes and a meal to someone, and it can alleviate their burden in that moment, and it makes me feel like I can feel a little bit of the joy of that person. So that's an equation that works for me, and time has shown me that has rippling effects. And that awareness, I've recently been trying to project into the world of politics, because it is so easy to see the two-sided aggression, the us them, the your team my team mentality of the political election cycle. It's so toxic. It's so horrible. It is this. Never do I feel like my neighbors and my fellow countrymen are my enemies more than during the democratic process. So what I've been trying to do is remind myself that this person is not someone who is against me. This is a person who, regardless of their political beliefs, is a human being who, if I am kind to them, I have the ability to make myself happier. Because if I spread light in someone else's world, that reflects into my world. Cooter's saying, there's a difference between trying to change the world and trying to make the world change. It's an interesting perspective. I think that I will think about that. I still think, like when you start to think globally, when you start to think about someone who is when you start to think about the world as something that you actually have a vantage point to understand, I think you can have a micro understanding of the world. I think you can have a familial understanding of the world. I think you can know, actually, that's not even, I'm not even sure that's true. And maybe a parent can chime in here. Do you ever have certainty that you know what's best for your kids? You do the best you can. So how can you have certainty to know what's best for a country or the world? That's an arrogance that I think is really dangerous. Every tyrant thinks that they're making the world a better place. Until you do enough self-work that you are so hollow, you are such an empty straw with none of your issues, that just divine energy flows through you, if you're coming from that place, maybe you can start to branch out and try to strategize about what the world needs. But nobody who is in that place, nobody who is a clear straw, has that instinct, because they know that it doesn't work that way. So, I also think that if you start to think that the world can be healed, then you are doomed. I think in the same way that if you try to end hunger or stop homelessness, the end of every day of your war, you lose. You lose, you lose, you lose, you lose, you lose. And you can only summon so much energy to lose every day. So if you don't try to heal the world, but instead try to heal this, add kindness here, act in integrity here, add something beautiful here. When you break it down into things that you know to be true, then you can end the day with 15 victories and you can wake up the next day energized. Now, is there a difference between trying to heal the world and trying to heal what's around you? Only in the mindset. One allows the grand strategy to be surrendered to something that's larger than you, which I think is a big part of the equation. And that's one of the reasons why people are critical of Burning Man, because it is so much energy goes towards creative expressions that do not impact the world. My argument is that the process of Burning Man awakens people's perspectives and awakens people's self-definition in a way that changes who they are in the world, that allows them to make small actions, which ripples then change the world. I look at my life and the way that I see myself in the world and how impacted that is based on embracing gifting, and how I treat everyone I see, well, I work to treat everyone I see as an opportunity to add light to their life. Not because I'm a saint, but because I'm selfish and I know that that's the easiest way to be happier. It's why I started First Saturdays. Not because I'm a saint and I think that, you know, I want to do good in the world, but because, oh, there's a lot of homeless people that need stuff. It's so easy to make their lives better by helping them out. And that strategy, that trajectory of life happened not from trying to make the world a better place, but instead a lot of work on the self. And that is something that I've had a lot of criticism over the years. And I tell the story sometimes about how when I was doing Hug Nation, just Hug Nation, I was not doing as much philanthropic stuff. Philanthropic, is that the right word? I would get emails and messages on YouTube all the time about people saying, man, you think you're doing good in the world? Why don't you work in a soup kitchen if you really want to help? And I kept thinking, like, you know, I have this faith, I have this belief that if I get right with myself, then I will be at a place where when I act in the world, it will be of service. And that there is a charitable aspect of inquiry and of self-work. There is an activism to stripping away your shit, because then you can be a vessel that allows for love to flow through you in the world. And, you know, 15 years later, after getting all those attacks, I'm like, holy crap, I work in a soup kitchen. Not because I should to make the world a better place, but because it's what it feels like I should be doing. It's an internal drive, need to act in that way of service rather than a ego mental pressure because you should fill some role or script that's come to you from the outside. Internally driven versus externally scripted. Am I making any sense? All right. Janelle saying, you can't change a thing. Whatever has happened is done. It's shifting our thinking and being in this moment that provides an opportunity for something different. I think that's part of it. You know, Byron Katie, her book, Loving What Is, you know, changed my life. It's an incredible book, and she does incredible work called The Work. If you go to thework.com, you can do free worksheets about it. And I've talked about it in a lot. But one thing that she often gets criticized about, and people go, wait a minute, so just do nothing? You know, just like don't question reality and just be at peace with all the horrible things in the world? Don't do anything? She's like, and I'll, you know, just try to paraphrase, but she's like, no. Don't. It's not that you do nothing. It's that you love reality. You don't wish things were different. You don't regret. You don't have pain because of the way that the world is. You just get at peace. You love it. And then you take the next step that feels right. And you do that over and over and over and over again. And you will be led to a beautiful place that makes a difference in the world. There's a line in A Course in Miracles that says, I need do nothing. And when I was going to lectures by Jacob Glass, he pointed this thing out that just like, oh my gosh, I need do nothing doesn't mean don't do anything or sit on the couch and do anything. He says, I need do nothing, meaning act, but from a place of love, from a place of inner guidance, not from a place of I have a need to do something because I should, because I need to alleviate guilt, because I need to do what my dad's story was about who I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to live up to expectations. I need do nothing. I act because I'm called to do so, because it feels right, because it's in alignment with my truth, because it causes me joy to be in alignment with who I am. So, getting close to 2 o'clock, and I'm starting to feel self-conscious that I've been ranting for a while. Sarah pointing out the importance, I think you're saying, of avoiding the tyranny of the should. Nothing worse than acting on what is an external should versus what you internally wish to follow. I keep hearing that I need to avoid the tyranny of the should. And I'll acknowledge that the recognizing the difference between an external script and an internal truth is exceptionally difficult. It's not as easy as going, oh, that's all I need to do is reject my scripts and tune into my truth. No, because you have these desires and instincts, and the spiritual path is about doing inquiry and constantly checking in and doing a practice where you're like, oh, wait a minute. Do I want to do that because of pride? Or do I want to do this because it's a way for me to use my gifts and be of service? Maybe a little of both? How can I, you know, tilt the scale so that I am acting from a place of a servant? How can I, you know, as someone who loves a microphone and loves getting on stage, I went through a whole kind of process of trying to figure out, like, can I be a flamboyant lover of attention and also be a servant of the divine? And I believe that, you know, this is the way I've been made. As long as I continue to check in and be aware of, am I acting as a servant or am I acting as an ego-driven entity? Jan says, I have, over the past few months, devoted myself to a disabled partner of mine as a service human. Wow. I help in the little ways I can. I listen to him when he speaks, and I have learned so much about myself through service. Maybe I haven't impacted the world, but I know my service makes his life better. I'm so glad you said that, because there is such a trap of thinking that you are supposed to impact the world in grand ways. You are impacting the world. In the scale of the cosmos, in the scale of the divine, in the scale of all that is, there's no difference in scale. A mountain and a sand piece are both parallel and equal. You are not more spiritual if you feed 10 mouths than you feed one. If you are in the direction of love and service, you are making a difference. Every cell in the body can't be a grand rod and cone. Some cells have to take care of the toenails. Every cell is working together for the good of all things. And some of those mean you got to do a simple role, like take care of your family. That is no less grand or important than starting a charity. We're reaching the 2 o'clock hour. Thank you so much for tuning in and being a part of this recalibration. I hope that something was said, or you heard something, or that helps you to be a little bit more in tune with your high self, with your true self, with your open-hearted, loving self. If you are headed to Burning Man, I have one more broadcast before I go offline for a couple weeks. But I'm quite active online right now. So if you have questions or concerns or thoughts or want to know when my schedule is or what you are, let me know what you're bringing to the Playa. I would love to connect online. Facebook is the easiest for me. If you are curious, my pink ride is Thursday at noon. I'm also speaking that afternoon at Burners Without Borders about vulnerability. On Saturday, I'm speaking at Red Lightning at noon. I'll post it all, and I hope I get to see some of you in the dust. And the rest of you, I hope I get to see you next week and anytime we can connect online, because this is part of the human experience too, with connection in physical space and in digital space. And the reminders of our connection is such a treat and a joy. And I'm so grateful. I love you. Have a beautiful day.